It's that time again to talk back to your radio. The WMNF listener survey is online at WMNF.org. Tell us what you do and don't like and would like to hear more or less of on your station. If you don't have computer access, call 813-238-8001 and we'll mail you a survey. Thanks. And if you happen to enjoy talking animals, you could mention that as one of the shows you like or listen to. And if you don't, remember what your mom said. You can't say something nice. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, the plant-based edition of Talking Animals today, in which we'll discuss the award-winning documentary, Vegucated, with its writer-director, Marisa Miller-Wolfson, as a prelude to WMNF showing Vegucated tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0 in Ybor City. First, though, we're kicking off the show with a relevant tune. This is Brian Wilson with Vegetables here on Talking Animals.
I'm gonna be round my vegetables. I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all. My favorite vegetable. If you brought a big brown bag of them home, I'd jump up and down and hope you'd toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well my vegetables, pawn off and sell my vegetables. I love you most of all. My favorite vegetable. I tried to kick the ball, but my tanny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, cause I'm so embarrassed.
Sleep a lot, eat a lot, brush them like crazy. Run a lot, do a lot, never be lazy. Sleep a lot, eat a lot, brush them like crazy. Run a lot, do a lot, never be lazy.
I know that you feel better when you send us in your letter and tell us the name of your favorite vegetable.
All right, that was Brian Wilson with Vegetables. What's your favorite vegetable? Into today's edition of Talking Animals, my name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Marisa Miller-Wolfson, writer-director of Vegucated, an award-winning documentary tracking three dyed-in-the-wool, meat and cheese-eating New Yorkers who accept a challenge to go vegan for 6 weeks. We see their struggles and triumphs and their discoveries as the film widens out to look at factory farming, environmental impact, and more. Throughout, Wolfson employs a light hand and humorous touches, which may help account for the film winning all kinds of acclaim and numerous awards. And perhaps on a related note, WMNF is showing Vegucated tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0 in Ybor City. You can get tickets by calling here at the station to speak to Miss Julie, 813-238-8001. There will also be tickets available at the door at the Roosevelt. And so we'll discuss the film and related topics when Marisa Miller-Wolfson joins us in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner, which today will involve more plant-based comedy, sort of. And we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Veducated tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0. And later, in further tribute to Veducated, we'll hear yet another plant-based song. How do you like them apples, as it were? Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment. A look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Riff and Reed News Department. I think we've largely covered the basics of the Veducated screening. Again, the doors are at 6:30, at which point there'll be vegan nibbles, kindly provided by Whole Foods Market and Roland Oats. You can sample a little vegan fare. Whatever your own sort of leaning is on the culinary side, the movie will be good, and you can check out a few little vegan samples. No extra charge. So anyways, the doors open over at the Roosevelt at 6:30 for that. The film will get underway at 7:30. And then right after, we'll have a panel discussion with viewpoints represented across the sort of onboard of vegan continuum. And the panelists slated to appear are Yprang Plews, nutritionist and host of WNS popular alternative health program, Isabel Tosi, chief organizer of Tampa Bay Veg Fest, which this year will be October 13th, once again at Cotinchobee Fort Brooke Park. Lee Fleet Courtney, WNF Music Director and host of Mondays It's the Music, and myself, Duncan Strauss. So anyways, $9 covers the whole shebang, the vegan nibbles, the screening, the panel discussion. So again, call Miss Julie here at the station, 813-238-8001. If you want to wait, I guess you'd get them at the door. If I were you, I'd get them sooner, but... And... Again, just want to re-mention at least one more time that these vegan nibbles are kindly being provided to us for tonight's screening by Whole Foods Market in Tampa and Rolling Oats in Tampa as well. Now, did you see the sneak preview of Animal Practice following or really interrupting the Olympics closing ceremony? Now, decades ago, I was a critic writing about the arts for a major publication. Now, I'm a bit out of practice, so I've done a few drafts of my review of Animal Practice, honing it to its most succinct essence. Here it is. Travesty. On the Animal News, pit bulls are still outlaws in Miami-Dade County. Voters overwhelmingly opted to keep a 1989 ban on American Staffordshire Terriers, Staffordshire Bull Terriers, and high-content mixes of both. Dalia Keynes, founder of the Miami Coalition Against Breed-Specific Legislation, the group that spearheaded the ban of repeal, was disappointed but not surprised. We didn't think it would pass. She said this was handed to us by the County Commission, whether we liked it or not, and we had to take up the challenge. We only had a few months to re-educate an entire county that has been brainwashed for 23 years. In February, a group of Miami-Dade commissioners short-circuited what appeared to be a winning effort in the state legislature to abolish the ban, calling an attack on the county's home rule authority. Keynes also said that putting the words pit bull and dangerous dog in the same sentence in the ballot question all but doomed the effort. Eradicating breed-specific legislation has the support of most national groups, including the Humane Society of the United States, the American Humane Society, the American Kennel Club, the United Kennel Club, and the American Veterinary Medical Association, the South Florida Veterinary Medical Association, and the American Bar Association's Tort Trial Insurance Practice Section. The South Florida Vets Group issued a statement before the vote supporting the repeal, citing a national study done over 40 years that concluded that pit type dogs are not, quote-unquote, disproportionately dangerous. So, on a related note, sort of, our guest next week on Talking Animals will be Stacy Coleman, Executive Director of the Animal Farm Foundation, which a New York-based organization, despite the name or the suggestion of its name, is now actually chiefly concerned with securing equal treatment and opportunity for pit bull dogs. So, we'll get into more of this next week directly with Stacy. And perhaps on a sort of related note, in a way, this comes from Science, Live Science. Your canine companion may be saying more about you than you realize. New research finds owners of stereotypically aggressive dog breeds, such as German Shepherds and Rottweilers, are more likely to be hostile and aggressive themselves compared with owners of typically laid-back pooches, such as Labrador Retrievers, according to a new study. In this study, aggressive dog breed owners scored higher in this personality trait of psychoticism, which is marked by anger, hostility, and aggression. And, quote, this might imply, although it's yet to be proven, that people choose pets that are an extension of themselves. Study researcher Deborah Wells, a psychologist at Queen's University Belfast, told Life Science in an email. The research published in the October 2012 issue of the journal Personality and Individual Differences is not the first to find personality differences in dog owners based on breed. Toy dog owners, for example, score high on the personality trait of openness characterized by appreciation of new experiences, according to a study presented at the British Psychological Society annual conference in London in April. The same study found that owners of a pastoral and utility breed such as Collies and Corgis were the most extroverted. Back here on the local scene, a lot sort of going on in the community cat, trap, neuter, return, feral cat community. For years of trap, neuter, return, TNR making a significant difference in reducing the number of cats and kittens euthanized in Hillsborough County. Reduced from 18,000 plus cats euthanized in 2005 to 9,000 plus cats euthanized in 2011. Now looks to be serious danger of witnessing TNR being outlawed. In Hillsborough County, few area vets are behind this movement and appear to be motivated by financial interests. There is no other basis for their attack on TNR up to now. So there are petitions and things online. There's, if you search CARE2, petition site, C-A-R-2, there's one that specifically deals with saving the cats of Hillsborough County. I signed that one. And you can also search for Saving TNR on Facebook. There's a Saving Community Cats Facebook page to keep you posted. And there's been a protest last week, another one on the horizon, I think, for this weekend. And so we'll keep you posted on that. We may deal with that more directly on next week's show as well. Looking ahead a little bit for local things coming up. Friday, August 24th, from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m., Pep House teaming up with the Gulf Coast Iguana Sanctuary to celebrate Lizard Live, Gatsby and Gangsters at the Serrata Beach Resort in St. Pete Beach. Bring your best-dressed gangster pooch and celebrate with some drinks and appetizers, silent auctions, doggy kissing booths, and music by the Horny Toads. So how about that? Find out more by going to petpalanimalshelter.com. Also looking ahead a little bit, folks at Loving Hut on Saturday, August 25th, will be having a buffet. Of course, it's a restaurant there, but there'll be a screening running sort of continuously throughout the day of the Miracle, Big Miracle, sorry, Big Miracle. And so you can head over there, you can have a bite to eat or not, and see the movie. I think it pretty much runs, like I say, every starts at 11, runs periodically throughout the day. So find out more. The Loving Hut folks, Loving Hut Tampa at lovinghut.us. And I'm not going to read this, but just if you didn't happen to see it, especially if you don't live maybe in the Tampa area directly or don't always see the Tampa Bay Times, just want to let you know that there was a really kind of cool, poignant story in the paper yesterday. Headline, Funeral Director Says Goodbye to Dog That Changed His Life. So it's all about this funeral director, obviously, and this dog that he kind of met up with and started looking after a few years ago and sort of became, the dog sort of became a de facto grief therapy dog. And fortunately, the dog himself was pretty aged and ill, and, you know, so it goes from there. But anyways, really, really well worth reading. And so I think we'll come back, if we have time, to some more items from the Animal News file later. But let's now step into the Comedy Corner, which usually involves animal-oriented comedy. It sort of does today, but also hooks into Vegetated, too. This is Jim Gaffigan with a portion of a piece called Eat Vegetarian on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I'm a vegetarian now. Anyone a vegetarian? Yeah, there you go. I'm not a strict vegetarian. I eat beef and pork. and chicken, but not fish, because that's disgusting. How can you tell when fish goes bad? It smells like fish either way. Well, this smells like a dumpster. Let's eat it. No one really likes fish. They just won't admit it. Like, I like fish just as long as it doesn't taste like fish. I got news for you. I don't think you like fish. I'm almost positive fish is supposed to taste like fish. Actually, you know what's really good on fish? Anything that kills the taste of fish. How about relish and a gallon of mayo? That'll do the job. What if we squeeze a lemon and wrap it in seaweed and cover it in soy sauce? He's anti-fish. And we're right next to Lake Michigan. I am amazed that we're still serving fish with the heads on there. Don't you always feel like that eye is looking at you like, hey, you don't mind if I watch while you eat my body, do you? Don't be distracted, a little tear comes out. You can just tell yourself it's butter. Oh, what if a fish was in the audience? That would be awkward for all of us. It could happen. Lake Michigan's right there, buddy. The fish would laugh, but on the inside it'd be crying. Sad. You and your fish head joke. Obviously, some people prefer it like that. Y'all have the fish. Keep the head on there and find out if it had a nickname.
All right. That's a portion, at least, of a piece from Jim Gaffigan called The Eat Vegetarian on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals. That's from his album Beyond the Pale. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Marisa Miller Wolfson. As I noted earlier, Marisa is the writer-director of Vegucated, an award-winning documentary tracking three dedicated meat and cheese-eating New Yorkers who accept a challenge to go vegan for 6 weeks. The film ends up being about far more than that, and we here at WMF love Vegucated so much we're showing it tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0 in Ybor City, 7:30. Preceded at 6:30 by Vegan Nibbles, provided by the nice folks at Whole Foods Market in Rolling Oats. So, you can get tickets at WNF.org or by calling here at the station, 813-238-8001, or at the door at the Roosevelt. Meanwhile, we're going to speak with Marisa right now. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Marisa Miller-Wolfson to Talking Animals. Good morning, Marisa.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
Good, good, good. So happy to have you join us. Thanks for making the time. And we're just so excited about screening Vegucated tonight. And we think as more people hear about the film right now, they'll be excited too. And in fact, well, this could make our conversation a little cumbersome. I was hoping you could amend each of your responses with, and please see Vegucated tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, cool. So, anyways, let's, of course, we'll jump into the film in a minute here, but since the movie is so clearly your baby, your vision, maybe you could sort of just give us a nickel tour of your pre-Vegucated life. I mean, in the film, we find out a bit about you, where you're from, but most folks listening haven't yet seen Vegucated, and so maybe you can just fill us in on a few more details, you know, where you grew up, and we'll get into some other stuff, too.
Sure thing. Well, I grew up in Indiana in the middle of corn country, mm-hmm. and I grew up a meat and cheese lover, German-American heritage, loved my sausages and my cheese and all that stuff.
Sure.
And then I went to college, lived with vegetarians in college and after college for about 7 years, but I always thought, you know, I'm not vegetarian, that's what they do, you know, meat is very much part of my culture and heritage, and I love it, so I didn't even think twice. And then I saw a film, an older film called We Are All Noah, and it was about how animals are treated across the board, not just on farms, but also, you know, in shelters and in labs and so forth. And I was sitting there and I thought, oh my gosh, if I consider myself an animal lover, you know, how can I feel okay paying someone else to kill an animal? And I know I wouldn't be able to do that myself. So then that set me down a path, and 3 months later, I went vegan, and that was over 10 years ago. So it just really changed my life so much. I got so much energy. I lost 15 pounds. I mean, it was awesome, and I thought, wouldn't it be great to capture that whole process on tape of someone going through that process of that awakening, that kind of eye-opening experience.
Sure. Well, we'll definitely get into that in some detail in a sec. But let's just back up for a sec, because in that recounting, I'd just be curious to know, like, when you were growing up, was your childhood, was there animals around the house? Were you a big animal nut then? I mean, it sounded like certainly later, as you've just told us the story, seeing the film and being kind of a young adult, that had a huge impact. But what was your sort of relationship with animals as a youngster?
I always loved them. I loved them so much. Unfortunately, my mom was very allergic to dogs and cats. So we had guinea pigs and we had fish. And I was so close to those darn guinea pigs. You know, it was the Millers and their guinea pigs. You know?
Yeah.
Well, we could have, and loved them so very much, and had them throughout my childhood, even in college. Our last one passed away when I was in college. So, yeah, and I would also, you know, rescue little insects from the pool if I was swimming and they were struggling, and any little injured animal in my path, I would try to help and save. I'd bring to the zoo or to the vets or.
Sure.
Yeah, animals have always been a part of my consciousness.
So that was really kind of the backdrop for then being kind of profoundly affected by the film and just being around other sort of vegetarian, vegan types at that point. Yeah. And then, if I'm not mistaken, that when you sort of made that change, then you kind of not long after became interested in sort of educating folks and sort of advocating for the vegan lifestyle as well.
I did. I hooked up with my colleague at the time, Mary Max. We started a nonprofit called Kind Green Planet, and we traveled around the country and organized screenings of other documentaries about animal issues and vegetarianism. And it was incredible the amount of lives that were changed just through seeing a film. You know, seeing film changed my life. And then here I was witnessing all these people, you know, changing their lives as a result, and maybe even becoming full-time vegan activists or full-time animal advocates just from having that aha moment, that sort of experience. And that just really sold me on the power of film.
Sure. And my sense is that, because I know that you still, in a sense, do a lot of that same work, really. I mean, it's taken on a different form, but you still very much are, you know, educating folks and helping spread the word and preaching the gospel, as it were. So, but my sense is that you sort of always, at least, or mostly, have been kind of a kinder, gentler activist and sort of vegan advocate. That's just kind of maybe more your style or the philosophy that you've employed along the way.
It is, Duncan. I remember when I was new to the movement and a new vegan. There was a vitriol and which I understand, you know, I understand we're all traumatized by what we've seen. We really are. You know, witnessing the death or torture or suffering of one animal is considered a traumatic event by the American Psychiatric Association. So when we see so much of this and the whole rest of the world doesn't care, mm-hmm. doesn't seem to care,
yeah.
That's really traumatic. So I understand where the anger comes from. I understand where the pain comes from. However, my goal is to win people over with kindness and, you know, making it appealing and baby steps, but not sugarcoating the truth. I think
yeah.
those are two different things.
Sure.
But I think just welcoming is really what was most effective to me. I remember being really turned off by certain language and tone when I got into it, and I just remembered that. So that's been a big part of my advocacy, is to try to always remember, where was I when I was making that transition, or even before?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did I feel about animal activists and vegans? And then I try to paint as appealing a picture as I possibly can. Also because I respect people, you know,
yeah.
and I respect that we are all different. We all have different life experiences, and you know, what might be easy for one person isn't easy for another. So So I just try to be compassionate towards people as well as animals.
Sure. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Marisa Miller-Wolfson, the writer-director of the acclaimed documentary Vegetated, which WNF is showing tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0 in Ybor City. If you'd like to ask Marisa a question, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so with that sort of philosophical style and stance and the experience of sort of crisscrossing the country, as you described a moment ago, including showing those films, what more specifically was the impetus for making Vegetated? Because there are plenty of activists then and now doing that kind of work, but precious few end up actually making films.
Well, I was in a special position. Number one, I was blissfully ignorant of what it took to make a film. Never having been to film school or even taken one film class. So that helped.
Yeah,
and
sure.
number two, I was working for this nonprofit, Kind Green Planet, which is funded by artist Peter Max. And his wife, Mary Max, was my mentor, my activism mentor. And we started this organization together.
Sure.
And they, you know, I was sitting in Super Size Me, in the summer of 04, I guess. And I remember thinking that was brilliant, you know, adopting a specific diet for however long. And then I noticed that Morgan detoxed from his burger binge on a vegan diet. And it was just a little title card at the end, but I thought to myself, oh gosh, that's the movie I want to see, is that process of going in the other direction. And also covering the ethical aspects as well, which is what was most compelling to me. I mean, the health stuff is great, but to me it was the ethical component that really got to me. So I remember I was at dinner with my colleague Mary Max, and I saw Super Size Me. She said, you know, I was thinking something similar. Let's do it. So she and Peter supported me for the first few years while I was working on the film. Financially, they supported my work on it.
Oh, great.
Because it is so, you know, media is so time consuming, but
yeah.
Film in particular, especially if you don't know what you're doing, is just so time intensive and labor intensive. And that's why people don't make the films, because it's just so expensive.
For sure.
So I had that real advantage of working with them at the time. But it has, you know, the field has been democratized. You know, the software is getting cheaper.
Sure.
Technology is getting more accessible. So we are seeing more and more films, and I hope we continue to see more.
Absolutely. And I should just back up for 1 sec and say that for those listening who may not have been aware immediately, Super Size Me and the reference to Morgan, it's Morgan Spurlock who made this documentary, Super Size Me, that was all about sort of what would happen if a guy ate McDonald's food, you know, every meal for X amount of days. And so obviously that was an influential film. But yeah, like you said, you were interested sort of in then, like, okay, once he had to come off that binge, there was a little note that said he did so by going vegan.
That's right.
So yeah, it's obviously long and sort of torturous path to make any kind of film, and again, as a first film. I mean, I do have to say, though, and maybe this was kind of some of the support, or maybe just had a particular gift for it. It does not seem like a first film. I mean, there's kind of a spirit, a sense of humor and fun, and kind of a confidence, really, that separates it, to me at least, from most first films.
Well, thank you, Duncan. I wish I could take all the credit for that, but I joined a filmmakers collective in Brooklyn with real filmmakers whose, you know, work has been on PBS and, you know, they're the real deal. And boy, did they rip me to shreds. They ripped that film to shreds.
Oh, yeah.
And that was great. Thank goodness they did, because I have a much better product. I have a much better story. At one point they said, you know, bring in some fresh eyes. So I got an Academy award-winning editor in Ellen Goldwasser, and she, you know, we hired her for a few weeks, and she came in and really shaped it. And then she came in again later as a finishing editor and, you know, just put some finishing touches on it. So I think that's what you're seeing is, you know, I wish I could take credit for that, but it was really the honing and the fine tuning by these real filmmakers that turned it into, you know, the kind of film that could win awards.
Sure.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
So, and it has, and I'm just so grateful for their help on that.
Well, again, that I totally understand. There still might be a little undue modesty because, again, you know, even Ellen Goldwasser has to shape something into a film. So obviously what you shot and how you approached it was you know, the great potential was there, even if she had to kind of sculpt it a little bit. Were there particular films you, from your experience you mentioned earlier or otherwise, that you loved or influenced you as you were making Veducated, filmmakers that you kind of sought to emulate?
Without a doubt. The most powerful film that I found that I was working with in terms of farm animal issues was Peaceable Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that by Tribe of Heart. Now that's been re-edited. It's just been released on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And that, man, was that powerful. And it just, you know, it told the story of modern agriculture through these people who had already changed their lives as a result of having had connections with animals or health scares or whatever. And just the mixture of humor and, you know, sadness was what, and poignancy is what I was going for. But I wanted to kick it up a notch because I actually come from a comedy background. I used to have a sketch comedy troupe, and we performed all around the country. And I stand up and whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So comedy is very much part of my persona. So
sure.
I wanted to kick that up a notch. And so I did, but, yeah, there are so many films out there that influenced me. Blue Vinyl is an environmentalist film. Even just My Date with Drew, which is sounds silly, but it's, about a guy who wants desperately to get a date with Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
But it's just that kind of storytelling and the humor and the funny, you know, the funny bits mixed with poignant bits is what I was really aiming for.
Sure. And I couldn't help think, even though he's, you know, maybe from in some ways a slightly different generation, but I also thought as I was watching the film of Michael Moore, just because you are in this film. You didn't just make it. You're on screen and sort of a central presence. And, you know, often, you know, fun and funny and entertaining, just drawing on that comedy background you just mentioned. But sometimes, of course, very serious and sober. And really kind of help anchor the film, even though we have these three principles that we'll talk about in a moment, there that, you know, sort of always kind of was an important through line and kind of kept, I think, the especially as there started to be various threads to the story, kind of kept them all together.
Thank you. That's a huge compliment. I think these other filmmakers that I mentioned were influenced by Michael Moore. It's hard to think of anyone who hasn't been influenced by Michael Moore in the last few years. And I will say, my friend Victoria Moran wrote a book called Main Street Vegan, and Michael Moore read it. Now, he used to be anti-vegan, anti-animal stuff, and he is coming around. He is absolutely coming around. That book has opened his eyes, and he's cut out red meat. He's really trying to, eat fewer animals. So that, you know, maybe there will be a vegan Michael Moore documentary in the future. I hope so. We'll see.
Well, yeah. In the meantime, I think Veducated certainly fits the bill nicely. So, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Marisa Miller-Wolfson, writer-director of the acclaimed documentary Veducated, which, again, we're showing, WNF is showing tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0 in Ybor City. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663. Or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so let's spend a moment or two or three maybe on the trio of folks who really constitute the center, the heart of Veducated, Tesla, Brian, and Ellen. First, I suppose it would be remiss if we didn't take 2 seconds to address where you trolled for the people who ended up, with this trio, but who you were when you were first seeking participants in the film.
Well, isn't it obvious, Duncan? I found them on Craigslist.
Of course. Well, it's obvious to me, but no.
In New York, seriously, in New York, that's where you find everything. That's where you find your apartment. That's where you find, you know, your furniture sometimes. You find your roommate. That's where you find a job often. So we interviewed about 25 people who responded to our Craigslist ad. And, you know, we said we weren't paying anybody. We were just wanting people who wanted to go vegan for 6 weeks, learn what it was all about, and have us, film them. So we got a good response.
That's cool. And you know, so much of the success and spirit, really, of the film rests on these three. I mean, their personalities, the differences, the overlaps kind of in their background, and how they came to the project, and the chemistry that really sort of develops between them, and, of course, with you as well. Can you just talk a little bit about the process of sorting through that 25 who did respond, and how you zeroed in on these three and your instinct whatever point about, hey, this is the three. These are the three.
They popped out. They really popped out on screen. And when we were watching the interviews, we thought whoever we're really enjoying watching now, just on from the interviews, we think we'll enjoy watching them, you know, for 75 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And we chose them according to, you know, sort of entertainment value, likability, accessibility, relatability.
Mm-hmm.
So do people see themselves in these characters?
Yeah.
And at first we actually had set out to pick one person, so it really could be the reverse of Super Size Me.
Mm.
We were hoping for a really unhealthy person. That unhealthy person didn't show up.
Okay.
Nobody who was really unhealthy showed up. I mean, all of our subjects went to lose weight, you know. Tesla had slightly high cholesterol and so forth, but
mm-hmm.
They weren't sick. But they were open to learning new experiences. They did want to feel better. They wanted to look better. And by the end, without giving it all away, they did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and we did kind of stack the deck a little bit in that we did choose people who had some relationship to animals in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that was really my driving force for doing this.
Sure.
And so that was a little bit of a setup.
Yeah. Well, we're sort of necessarily being careful to talk around certain educated issues because, again, we're hoping people will, see the film tonight, or if not, then another opportunity soon. So we don't want to have to do too many spoiler alerts here. But really, as I kind of alluded to before, you know, it starts off with these three, accepting the challenge to go vegan for 6 weeks. But then it really, as the movie unfolds, it becomes about a lot more than just what these three people are eating. You take them on field trips and otherwise introduce them to how things work in animal agriculture and factory farming. And some grim realities that these folks, as kind of surrogates for us as the viewer, find eye-opening. So what sort of thinking did you do in determining what the tone and approach of that part of the film would be when dealing with the factory farming aspect, for example, how much kind of graphic footage or not, and, you know, I'm sure you had more than a little bit of grappling with those issues.
Oh, yeah. We spent so much time fine-tuning the edit. But before then, I already had a sense of the story arc. I knew that at the beginning we'd have a lot of comedy with them trying to, you know, find their way around being vegan and the trials and tribulations of that. And
sure.
Then I built it up. It isn't until about a third of the way into the film that we even start talking about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they really were blown away. And
Yeah. We
wanted to do hands-on experience. So we had them watch a film. It's actually Peaceable Kingdom. And that opened their eyes and that got the ball rolling. But, you know, as you were saying, we took them on field trips where they had hands-on experiences. Again, not too many spoilers, but they end up rescuing a couple of animals and,
mm-hmm.
And visiting animals on a farm animal sanctuary. And that was really profound, especially for Ellen's daughter, Debbie, you know, who was,
yeah.
I guess, 10 in the film. And, she was really profoundly affected by meeting those animals. So I wanted to make sure that there, you know, there was the eye-opening truth, but I didn't want it to be overwhelming to where people would walk out. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I have shown documentaries. Well, there's actually one documentary in particular, which I won't name, where I did two screenings of that. In both cases, people walked out, a third of the audience left.
Yeah.
And so, okay, that's not the experience that I want people to have watching this film. So I didn't show any, in the film, I didn't show any of the egregious abuse at all. No clubbing or hitting or, you know, beating.
Yeah.
Just the standard practices. And so I don't want people to turn off because they shut down. So we, you know, it's actually people who know the real stuff that goes on. They say, oh, well, vegetated is actually quite mild.
Right. Well, and again,
and I wanted to keep it that way. So it's a glimpse into the truth, without just devastating people.
Right. And to me, that seems totally consistent with what you were saying earlier about your work, as an activist and advocate about, you know, understanding the traumatic response people had and the vitriol that many experienced, but that you just didn't approach it that way. And so it kind of makes sense now from what you're saying that the film would sort of carry through that sensibility. And, you know, there's a, you know, kind of a good handful at least of films that in recent years and even older than that loosely deal with the same sort of topics, whether the emphasis tends to be the virtues of a plant-based diet or the harsh realities of factory farming and sometimes, you know, the animals rescued from that world, et cetera. But there's really across that group a real huge difference in how those issues are handled. And, you know, I saw a film over the weekend, and sat with, at it with my mother-in-law, a woman who works for a sort of a prominent national organization that promotes a vegan lifestyle and animal welfare, her friend, all fairly like-minded when it comes to animal protection, compassion, et cetera. We agreed that this film was so heavy in tone and just relentless in depicting that stuff that it probably overshot being effective and instead was probably counterproductive.
Right. That's the experience. You're describing the exact experience that I had watching one film where I was like devastated. I could barely function. I mean, people, you know, they'll watch a film like that and they won't be able to function after that for a while.
Yeah.
And I definitely didn't want that to be the experience. I also want to make a film that created understanding within families, within communities around this issue. And you want to feel good about the film that you're giving to your mom or your colleague or your friend.
Sure.
And you want to know that they're going to enjoy it, but they'll also, you know, they'll learn something. They'll also laugh. I mean, the three people we chose are hilarious.
Yeah.
And, they're, you know, people in the film will laugh more than they cry. And that's really what we were going for. So, and it has been incredibly effective.
For
Gosh,
sure.
Gosh, I have 10 pages, Duncan, of, this is so dorky that I did this, but I was working on this film for 7 years, so
yeah.
It's just I'm savoring every email or post or tweet that I get from people saying they've changed as a result. So I have 10 pages of quotes like this, and it just keeps me going because I think I'm a little traumatized, you know, having done, you know, all this work, looking at all this footage, and just to know that things will be changing.
It
just feels great.
Very cool. Well, let's, before we're sort of nearing the home stretch of our time already somehow, so let's get at least one caller involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Marisa Miller-Wolfson.
Yes, sir.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment for Marisa?
I actually had more of a personal comment for Ms. Marisa.
Okay.
More about, you know, your veganism and your vegetarianism. I myself am a 21-year-old carnivore, so to speak. One thing I've always wondered about veganism and vegetarianism, and I tried to get an answer from my sister about this when she was going through this whole thing. I don't deny, you know, the health aspect of it, but correct me if I'm wrong here. When you first started out, you said it was when you grew up on a farm, and when you saw the cruelty that was being done to the animals, that was when you decided you didn't want any more to do with that. You wanted to go vegan, correct?
It was the cruelty aspect. That's right. That propelled me into veganism. Yes, for sure.
All right. Now, I can see where the animal rights activism part of that would help a lot. But from my point of view, I don't really understand how eating less animals would help prevent the cruelty. I mean, I do see where cruelty comes into the slaughter of the animals and the treating of the animals, but it really has nothing to do, in my opinion, of you eating the animal is cruelty.
Well, that's an interesting point. The process of the eating the animal certainly isn't cruel, but, you know, we're living in an economy of supply and demand. So the more demand there is for meat, the more the supply. So, you know, in the last 50 years, our meat production has increased fivefold because of the growing demand. So now there are something like 55 billion farm animals around the world who are killed every year. So there's less suffering if you don't have the animal be born into these horrible life conditions and then killed. So that's the concept. And in the film, there's a T-shirt that Ellen ends up buying, and it says 95, the number of animal lives saved by a vegetarian each year. So that's like, I mean, if you think of that, 95 lives a year, that's like going to the animal shelter and adopting, you know, an animal, what is it, every 2 weeks, every week and a half? I don't know
yeah.
the math. But that's the concept, is that not only are you declining, you know, I'm not going to increase the demand, you're actually increasing the demand for other alternatives and healthy alternatives, so that you'll see those more on the marketplace, but become more accessible over the place. So that's where the power is.
Now, just one more thing on that. Now,
okay, we do have to scoot. So if you could just make it very, very brief.
Okay, in theory, if you were to take out the cruelty to the animals, even though the consumption rate will stay the same, if you took out the cruelty aspect, do you think it would be humane, so to speak, to, you know, eat your animals?
Well, that's a two-part question. Number one is, are you killing the animal? And, or there's another interesting alternative, which is in vitro meat. So there's actually a movement right now of meat being produced synthetically, but it is the cells of animals, so that you actually will have a hunk of animal flesh without the actual animal with it. And that, you know, I have kind of a gut, like, blah, response to that. But without the cruelty, you know, I don't see the ethical problem there. So that I'm comfortable with. But if it involves, if the animal, quote unquote, had a great life and then was killed, I'm still not comfortable with that, because my cat has a great life and I wouldn't be comfortable with someone killing him. So does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Thanks so much for your call. And obviously, I don't think you identified yourself as a carnivore. I don't think you would have taken the time to call. And you're on hold. And I'm sorry for quite a while there. So without, obviously you're sort of curious and interested in these. So if there's any chance, I urge you to come see the film. It really, I think, will help put a lot of this an even greater perspective for you. So, but thanks either way for calling Talking Animals.
Thanks for your question.
So, yeah, so Marisa, we're just sort of in the home stretch of our time here, and I have so many things. But one thing that the conversation you just had with the caller kind of brings up, because, you hear this phrase frequently, well, regularly, I shouldn't say frequently necessarily, but humane slaughter as part of, the conversations that often happen with people who think, there's – I'm not really ready to give up meat, and I understand, that what I have in front of me is the product of humane slaughter. Do you want to just sort of address that for a moment?
Sure. I mean, I do think there are different systems where, the killing of a person or an animal can involve more or less suffering. So I'm acknowledging that. But I will say that I do see slaughter as an act of violence. And I think if it's not necessary to even have that act of violence in the world, then why have it? If we have healthful alternatives, then why don't we go that route instead? And not everyone has the same choices. I recognize that. But for those who do have choices, why even go down that road? I mean, I think if people could just put themselves in the animal's hooves, or even think of their dog or their cat, any animal that they've grown to love, and put them through that experience, I think they'll be, better connected with what that experience might actually be like, and they might feel differently about it. I don't think there really is such a thing as, quote-unquote, humane slaughter, because no matter what, it is an act of violence.
So, Marisa, there's so many other things I was hoping to chat with you about. But really, I guess one of the things that's sort of important that would almost now become a through line of our conversation here today, which is that between the way you did your advocacy and activism work and the way you made the film, that I believe as far as – because there's so many philosophical divides in this world, and one of them is the whole baby steps versus do it now divide. And I'm going to guess, based on everything else you've said, that you are, on the baby step side of that gulf.
Yes and no, Duncan. Yes and no.
Okay.
So for some people, baby steps really work.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, just taking the plunge and having that that sink or swim experience really expands their, well, so for example, your learning curve is pretty steep, right, when you go from eating a standard American diet to a vegan one at first, and then it evens out. So, you know, how do you like your pain, chronic or acute? You know, there's some people who just plunge right in, and their learning curve is really steep at first.
Yeah.
The fear there is that they don't quite do it, you know, right, and then they kind of give up not having really learned what they need to learn in order to do it properly. So that, on the one hand, I have a reservation there. On the other hand, some people do that and they do it beautifully and they never want to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people, it's the baby steps is really what they're most comfortable with.
Yeah.
So I think it doesn't matter how you get there as long as you put one foot in front of the other and just set yourself down this path and do think of it one day at a time. Don't think, oh, what am I going to do for Thanksgiving? Put Thanksgiving aside.
Right.
And just focus on today.
It's
today,
August,
I'm going to do this.
It's August 15th. Thanksgiving is a ways
off. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
Cool. All right. Well, gosh, Marisa, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Marisa Miller-Wolfson. She's the writer-director of Veducated. There's a great website, getveducated.com, and Veducated is V-E-G-U-C-A-T-E-D. There's a lot of folks who want to seem to spell that third letter with the D, but it's getveducated.com. They're also on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. And, again, we're showing the film tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0, and really looking forward to it. It's just a wonderful film. So thank you, Marisa, for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Duncan, and thanks so much for hosting a screening. If it weren't for our community screening host, I don't know what we would do. So, and you've done a fantastic job of putting this event together. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, cool. Thank you again, and good luck in your next project, and we'll look forward to hearing about that one.
Thanks.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. We have, you're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. Do not need to be a WMNF member to win. Then there'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Veducated tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0. So the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. Just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, August 22nd, when our guest will be Stacy Coleman, Executive Director of the Animal Farm Foundation, a New York-based organization which, despite the suggestion of its name, is now chiefly concerned with securing equal treatment and opportunity for pit bull dogs. I heard her speak a couple of times at a conference recently and was enormously impressed. So hope you'll join me next week for my conversation with her, and we got all kinds of folks calling in now with presumably a guest. Let's take them in the order they came. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune? Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Yeah, the police, canary in a coal mine.
You are correct, sir. What is your first name?
I'm Steve.
Okay, Steve, I'm going to put you on hold, get your information. We'll get you set up to see the screening of Veducated tonight at the Roosevelt 2.0. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
All right. I also hope you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to Talking Animals Facebook page or Twitter feed and more. Please like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. If you want to keep listening to news and information, you can switch to our digital channel, 88.5 HD3, The Tom Hartman Show, starts up at noon at WNF.org/thesource. Otherwise, stay tuned for the wonderful Scott Elliott and the All-Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. And one more time, we hope you'll join us at tonight's screening of Veducated at the Roosevelt 2.0 in Ybor City. 6:30 we'll open the doors and offer vegan nibbles provided by Whole Foods and Rollin' Oats. Movie starts at 7:30, followed by a panel discussion with Isabel Tossi, Eprang Plews, Flea, and me. Tickets at WNF.org, calling us here at the station, 813-238-8001, or at the door at the Roosevelt. We're closing out today's show with, of course, another veggie tune. This is Mike Doty with a song entitled Vegetable. Taking us up to the NPR News on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Braden, and Wiki Watching and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Hope to see you tonight. Thanks.
I was alone, skipping along, killing the song, digging it long gone. I was alone, breaking it off, making it soft, pushing the road home. Sear it like a vegetable, starve it like a vegetable, mash it like a vegetable. Dip it like a vegetable, fry it like a vegetable, boil it like a vegetable. I was a chump, making the jump, chipping the bump, driving the speedboat. I was a chump, swallow a lump, kid I smoked, taking an eighth note. Steam it like a vegetable, green like a vegetable, freeze it like a vegetable. Like a vegetable, bake it like a vegetable, burn it like a vegetable. Out of the black, skipping the track, taking it back. I make a bid from the middle, rough rod like a cosmonaut. I got shunned for the refund. But you're restless in your best dress. I'm depressed at your swanky dress. Live in the machinery, salty of the hex. Hellbound, surround the compound, make the word swell in the villanelle. Ah well, you got the dweller, dispeller, tremble when you disassemble. Scrawl a rough map on a fool's cap. Mr. Weinstein drinking a strike nine, that's why I compel you to swim the fishing well.
From NPR News.